And a wonderful, wonderful welcome to you today. Bob DiGiacomo, Intentional Growth Coaching and Destiny Road, the destiny to your future, the journey to your destiny is only one step away. And today I'm going to be talking about coincidences that don't happen coincidentally. And I'll just get that out of the way for a moment. I don't know about you, but there are things that occur, I know, in my life that I consider not to be coincidental, coincidentally. I think things happen for a reason, and we get those little announcements that alert us to things that are going on, and we sometimes say it's a coincidence, but in reality, it's actually a message from a higher source, kind of how I believe. And today in my memories on Facebook, up popped something. I'm going to share it with you, but I'm also going to share with you a story. And I hope you will take a few moments to watch this in its entirety as I tell the story. This will come across as both a podcast and a YouTube video. And at the very end, I will put up on the screen how you can coincidentally, you know, subscribe to those things. But in my memories today, it came across a story reminding me about something that occurred during World War II, something that occurred during the Holocaust, which occurred during World War II. Now, there's a number of people out there that have been led to believe that the Holocaust never happened. And that would be the succeeding generations that came after my generation, the baby boomers, because we were the result of what took place as a result of World War II, etc. I don't want to digress on all of that, but to point out that if we don't teach history, then much of what has happened will be forgotten, or it will be changed to fit the time that we're in. And just very quickly, in 1942, a man chose to be led with 192 children to the gas chamber. And today, he is still remembered. And as long as we have things like this to remind us, he will still be remembered and celebrated for his act of what he did during the Holocaust. And I hope that we can strive to never forget people like him, heroes like him, who stood up in the name of humanity. His name was Janusz Korczak, and he happened to run an orphanage for Jewish children. So when his 192 children were being led to the gas chamber, he chose not to go the other way. He chose to actually go in with them. And actually, you know, of course, he died as a result of that. And it reminds me of something that I posted in a different video where I had been watching The Winds of War. And there was a scene in there as they were cleaning out the ashes from the ovens of the gas chamber as to what they did with the ashes. Now, I don't broadcast this to be somber and down and negative, because in actual fact, the story that I'm going to share with you right now is entitled Miracles Do Happen. And that's why I say coincidences don't happen coincidentally. And so I will be reading this story to you. Have you ever experienced a miracle? Many people who have don't even realize it. Others are simply waiting for their chance to see evidence of God and his angels at work. Now, whichever category you fall into, you'll be amazed and transformed by this eye-opening collection of stories spotlighting God's bold providential intervention in human lives, just like yours. Miraculous guidance, timely provision, mysterious interventions. Prepare to believe. Scripture assures us that God is active in each person's life. All too often, however, we find ourselves doubting this vital truth or believing that God's interest in the details of human experience ended centuries ago. And yet, God's work in our lives, sometimes miraculous, sometimes mundane, is not a reality relegated to the past. His guiding hand still delivers, still protects, still comforts, still provides, and still answers prayer today, just as it did in biblical times. And I'm referring to a book where this story I'm reading to you comes from. It's called The Wings of God. It's a compilation of 42 documented stories of God's involvement in the lives of people who need and receive a miracle. And this compelling collection will give you deeper confidence in God as your deliverer, a heightened level of trust in God for the future, fresh insights into events in your own life that you might have once seen as coincidences. And perhaps you'll have a renewed faith in the power of prayer. So the story itself is where Marcel Sternberger, who is a methodical man of nearly 50, with bushy white hair and guileless brown eyes and a bouncing enthusiasm as a Tsarist dancer of his native Hungary, he always took the 909 Long Island Railroad train from his suburban home to Woodside, New York, where he caught a subway into the city. On the morning of January 10th, 1948, Sternberger boarded the 909 as usual, and en route, he suddenly decided to visit Laszlo Victor, a Hungarian friend who lived in Brooklyn, because he was ill. Accordingly, at Ozone Park, which is a stop along the way, Sternberger changed to the subway for Brooklyn and went to his friend's house and stayed until mid-afternoon. He then boarded a Manhattan-bound subway for his Fifth Avenue office, and here is where the story gets incredible. As I say, the mundane prior, the miracle after. The car was crowded, and there seemed to be no chance of getting a seat, but just as I entered, a man sitting by the door suddenly jumped up to leave, and I slipped into his empty place. I've been living in New York long enough not to start conversations with strangers, but being a photographer, I have the peculiar habit of analyzing people's faces, and I was struck by the features of this passenger to my left. He was probably in his late 30s, and when he glanced up, his eyes seemed to have a hurt expression in them. He was reading a Hungarian language newspaper, and something prompted me to say in Hungarian, "I hope you don't mind if I glance at your paper." The man seemed surprised to be addressed in his native language, but he answered politely, "You may read it now. I'll have time later on." During the half-hour ride to town, we had quite a conversation. He said his name was Bela Paskin, a law student when World War II started. He had been put into a German labor battalion and sent to the Ukraine. Later, he was captured by the Russians and put to work burying the German dead. And after the war, he covered hundreds of miles on foot until he reached his home in Debrecen, a large city in eastern Hungary. I myself knew Debrecen quite well, and we talked about it for a while. Then he told me the rest of the story. When he went to the apartment once occupied by his father, mother, brother, and sisters, he found strangers living there. Then he went upstairs to the apartment that he and his wife once had. It was also occupied by strangers, and none of them had ever heard of his family. As he was leaving, full of sadness, a boy ran after him, calling, "Paskin, Paskin." That means Uncle Paskin. Well, he basically was saying Uncle Paskin, Paskin Batsy. The child was the son of some old neighbors of his, and he went to the boy's home and talked to his parents. "Your whole family is dead," they told him. "The Nazis took them and your wife to Auschwitz." Auschwitz was one of the worst Nazi concentration camps, and Paskin gave up all hope. A few days later, though heartsick and too heartsick to remain in Hungary any longer, he set out again on foot, stealing across the border after border until he reached Paris. And he managed to immigrate to the United States in October of 1947, just 3 months before I met him. All the time he had been talking, I kept thinking that somehow his story seemed familiar. A young woman who I had met recently at the home of friends had also been from Debrecen. She had been sent to Auschwitz. From there, she had been transferred to work in a German munitions factory. Her relatives had been killed in the gas chambers. And later, she was liberated by the Americans and was brought here in the first boatload of displaced persons in 1946. Her story had moved me so much that I had written down her address and phone number, intending to invite her to meet my family and thus help relieve the terrible emptiness in her life. It seemed impossible that there could be any connection between these two people, but as I neared my station, I fumbled anxiously in my address book. I asked, in what I hoped was a casual voice, "Was your wife's name Maria?" He turned pale. "Yes," he answered. "How did you know?" He looked as if he was about to faint. I said, "Let's get off the train." I took him by the arm at the next station and led him to a phone booth. He stood there like a man in a trance while I dialed her phone number. It seemed hours before Maria Paskin answered. Later, I learned her room was alongside the telephone, but she was in the habit of never answering because she had so few friends and calls were always for someone else. This time, however, there was no one else at home, and after letting it ring a while, back in the days when phones rang, guys, she responded. When I heard her voice at last, I told her who I was and asked her to describe her husband. She seemed surprised at the question, but gave me a description. Then I asked her where she had lived in Debrecen, and she told me the address. Asking her to hold the line, I turned to Paskin and said, "Did you and your wife live on such and such a street?" "Yes," Bella exclaimed. He was white as a sheet and trembling. "Try to be calm," I urged him. "Something miraculous is about to happen to you. Here, take this telephone and talk to your wife." He nodded his head in mute bewilderment, his eyes bright with fear. He took the receiver, listened a moment to his wife's voice, then suddenly cried, "This is Bella. This is Bella." And he began to mumble hysterically. Seeing that the poor fellow was excited, he couldn't talk coherently. I took the receiver from his shaking hands. "Stay where you are," I told Maria, who was also sounding hysterical. "I am sending your husband to you. We will be there in a few minutes." Bella was crying like a baby and saying over and over again, "It's my wife. I go to my wife." At first, I thought I had better accompany Paskin, lest the man should faint from excitement. But I decided that this was a moment in which no strangers should intrude. Putting Paskin into a taxi cab, I directed the driver to take him to Myers' address, paid the fare, and said goodbye. Bella Paskin's reunion with his wife was a moment so poignant, so electric, with suddenly released emotion that afterwards neither he nor Maria could recall much about it. I remembered only that when I left the phone, I walked to the mirror like a dream to see if maybe my hair had turned gray, she said later. The next thing I know, a taxi stops in front of the home, and it is my husband who comes toward me. Details I cannot remember, only this I knew, that I was happy for the first time in many years. Even now, it is difficult to believe that it happened. We both suffered so much. I have almost lost the capability to not be afraid. Each time my husband goes from the house, I say to myself, will anything happen to take him from me again? Her husband is confident that no horrible misfortune will ever befall them. Providence has brought us together, he just says simply. It was meant to be. Skeptical persons will no doubt attribute the events of this memorable afternoon to mere chance, but it was But was it chance that made Marcel Sternberger suddenly decide to visit his sick friend and hence take a subway line that he had never ridden before? Was it chance that caused the man sitting by the door of the car to rush out just as Sternberger came in? Was it chance that caused Bella Paskin to be sitting beside Sternberger reading a Hungarian newspaper? This story is, as I say, from a book called Great Stories Remembered. It's a book by Paul Deutschman. And if you're interested in reading more, I certainly recommend you grab hold of it. But my point is that coincidences, they don't happen coincidentally. History, we do need to remember it. We do need to keep teaching it to those who are following us, our children, our grandchildren. It is just so important. And stories like this can be tearjerkers, but are true nonetheless. You know, I'm going to ask you today what has been happening in your life? What has been happening coincidentally? What boop has suddenly happened to you that has caused you to go this way or that way when you normally would have gone that way instead of this way? It's called life. And maybe you will have a stronger belief in a higher authority. I know I do. And it's just a story that is a great story. How many great stories do you have in your lives? Have you written any of them down? Have you gone back to remember them? Have you shared them with those in your family that have followed you so that they know what they need to know? And as I mentioned, if you want to subscribe to my YouTube channel where I will be posting this, and if you want additional leadership or podcasts that I produce and create, that information is up there as well. I'm on iTunes under the Bermuda Bob Show, as well as under Intentional Growth Coaching. And if you want to reach out and have a chat with me, contact me at my Advisory Cloud link, and just be sure to subscribe. It's all about moving forward and making the most of what we have. Until next time, Bob DiGiacomo, Intentional Growth Coaching, and Destiny Road. The road to your destiny is just one step away. Make it a great, wonderful, significant rest of your day or evening if you're watching this at night. But do watch it again and let that story sink in. Bye for now. God bless.